Welcome to the PDPW podcast, brought to you by Professional Dairy Producers, dairy's professional development organization.
Well, hello, all of those of you who've taken time to tune in and listen to this podcast. I'm Tom Thibodeau, Distinguished Professor of Servant Leadership at Viterbo University. So good to have an opportunity to be with you today, and we're going to do a little storytelling. The importance of our life stories. If at the end of your life you don't have any good stories, what do you got? And how important stories are in our lives. Stories find the gold in our lives. Stories remind us of what is important. Why do we tell stories? Because we remember them. None of us like long lectures. That's why TED Talks now are limited to 15 minutes. None of us really like sermons. We go to church, but we don't like long sermons. But all of us cannot resist a good story. Oh, once upon a time, I remember when, and your ears just kind of perk up and you begin to be engaged. How important it is that we listen to the stories of one another. David Brooks, in his new book, How to Know a Person, writes this. One day, about a decade ago, Nicholas Epley was commuting by train to his office at the University of Chicago. As a behavioral psychologist, he was well aware that social connection is the number one source of happiness, success, good health, and much of the sweetness of life. Human beings are social animals who love to communicate with each other. Yet in this commuter train that day, he looked around and it hit him. Nobody was talking to anyone. It was just headphones and screens, and he wondered, why aren't these people doing the thing that makes them happiest? Later, he conducted some experiments in which he induced people to talk with other commuters during their rides downtown. When the ride was over, they arrived at their destination. Researchers were there to ask them how much they enjoyed the trip. The comments were overwhelmingly positive. People, introverts as well as extroverts, reported that a commute spent talking with someone was much more fun than a commute spent locked into your screen. So why don't people talk more? Epley continued his research and came up with an answer to the mystery. We don't start conversations because we're bad at predicting how much we'll enjoy them. We underestimate how much others want to talk. We underestimate how much we will learn. We underestimate how quickly other people will want to go deep and get personal. If you give people a little nudge, they will share their stories with enthusiasm. As I hope I've made clear by now, people are eager, often desperate, to be seen, heard, and understood. And yet we've built a culture and a set of manners in which that doesn't happen. The way you fix it is simple, easy, and fun. Ask people to tell you their stories. Ask people to tell you their stories. So today, as I begin to think about concluding 41 years in higher education, having the privilege of teaching students across over four decades, of being involved in education for 50, I'm reminded of some memorable students who actually became my teachers. Human beings are flesh and blood, memory and hope. Oh, the memories of those young people who are now accomplished adults have helped to shape me in becoming part of the person who I am today. Their courage, their integrity, their persistence and resilience are signs that the next generation is got things well in control, and we need to trust that next generation. We need not only to tell them what we think, but we need to also watch their example, listen to their stories. One of those people, her name was Sarah. She was a sophomore here at Viterbo University and majoring in nursing. She was also a runner, and she was preparing to run a marathon that summer. The warm weather came in March, and she went out for a run after class. She ran on a trail that goes right through our town, and unfortunately, there was a man on the trail that day who had evil in his heart and a knife in his hand, and as she ran by, he attacked her. He stabbed her. He was going for her neck, and then another runner came along, and the man ran off. And this other woman, unbelievable at that time, had one of the first cell phones, and she called for help. 911 came and put her in the ambulance and rushed her to the emergency room. And while she was laying in her own blood in the emergency room, she looked up and said to the doctor, "When you call my mom, tell her not to spaz out. I'm going to be okay." Here she was, fighting for her life, and the only thing that she could think about was the love of her mother. She went through 6 hours of reconstructive surgery, had over 90 stitches placed in her face and her neck, where she had wounds. Her father and mother came down. They were worried, just terribly worried and afraid for their daughter. The father called the university president and made arrangements for her to finish her semester at home. He went in and talked to his daughter the next day when she came out of the anesthetic and said, "Well, we're going to take you home." And she said, "No, you're not. I'm going to stay and finish here." Well, he said, "I'll come back a little bit later." And all Friday night and all of Saturday, he tried to convince his daughter to come home for the rest of the semester. And she said, "No, Dad, I'm going to stay here and finish." He had no idea the strength of the woman that he had raised. And this young woman on Monday morning calls me and says, "Tom, I have to speak with the DA this afternoon. I will be a little bit late to class." Now, I would tell you over the years, sometimes I have people call and say they're not coming to class because they might have a sore throat later that day. But this young woman, after being attacked, is calling me to tell me I'll still be there. She walks into class with a friend of hers, and I can see the scars and the bandages on her face and on her neck. Her friend came in and put her books down, sat next to her friend, and as I was lecturing and speaking with the class, her eyes were fixed on me. I would look over in one corner of the room, I came back, and there she was, fixed on me. Her friend was sitting next to her and dabbing her neck where one of the stitches had come loose and there were drops of blood. Everyone left. At the end of class, she stayed with her friend. And I said, "How are you?" And she said, "I'm going to be fine." That man will not take away the rest of my life. I refuse to live in fear. You know, Tom, what you taught us is absolutely correct. The only thing that allows evil to triumph is for enough good people to do nothing. I am a good person, and I'm doing something. She finished the semester in nursing. She ran the marathon. Her sister, her younger sister, was so impressed by her older sister's effort and courage, she contacted Runner's World, and Runner's World did a story on this young woman who overcame that kind of adversity to successfully finish a marathon race. The young woman finished up a terrible. She married and is now a mother with, I think, 3 or 4 children. But I've never forgotten her. Her courage, her moral courage, her resilience, the internal strength that she tapped into that would have never been possible had she not been attacked. And I'm always reminded, the only thing that allows evil to triumph over good is for enough good people to do nothing, and she was a very good person. I saw that same kind of fortitude in a student I had who had come from Rwanda. She had finished her schooling in Rwanda. She's a survivor of the Rwandan genocide. She talked about how she was being targeted in school, even by the teachers, and that their family had to escape, running across the border to Burundi. As they're running into the Burundi, the Burundian soldiers are coming at them. Meanwhile, the Rwandan soldiers were chasing them, and they were then found shelter in Burundi, where she had to live for the next 4 or 5 years as a refugee before they could return to Rwanda, their home, to be reunited with other family members who had survived that massacre. After she completed her bachelor's degree, she went on for studies in Switzerland, came to the United States to learn English, was here for 90 days. In order to stay in the country, had to get into a master's program. She knew a pastor who lived in La Crosse, Wisconsin, was able to come from Florida to La Crosse, Wisconsin. The pastor contacts us at Paterbo. She gets into her master's degree in servant leadership. She's in my class, a woman who has just come from Rwanda. She spoke three different languages. French was one of them. And one of our assignments was to recite a poem. And she said, I know English only a little bit. Could I do my poem, a Rwandan poem, in French? I said, that would be fine. She was taken in by the rest of the students. We had a fundraiser for her. She lived with one of our students who gave her a place to live. We helped to nurture her education. She graduated with a master's degree in servant leadership, went back to Rwanda, where she would then became the head of an NGO, working with women in leadership, building their businesses, because many of the survivors were women after the Rwanda massacre. And these are women who had come from the different tribes who attacked each other. So she was a reconciler. She was a peacemaker. She was an entrepreneur. In fact, when President Obama goes to Africa to meet with young entrepreneurs, he meets this amazing woman and then invites her to the White House. I've been teaching for 41 years. I've never been invited to the White House. She is now married and living in Rwanda. And the last I heard, she was assistant to the Secretary of State of Rwanda, helping to build up people as servants and leaders in her country. And I'm thinking to myself, where did this young girl who survived a massacre get the courage to come across the ocean to study English, to find herself in La Crosse, Wisconsin, to go back to her country, and now provide the leadership that's so necessary for the development of our nation? I think of a young man who was deployed to Iraq. He had come, and after a year in college, decided that he wanted to serve in the United States military, and he went and was deployed to Iraq. He was on reconnaissance. He was out in the villages and the hinterlands of the deserts. He told me about how he was able to retrace in some places the footprints of Moses from the Old Testament. It gave him an opportunity in the midst of that desert night to study the Bible. And he was just really struck by the historical reality of that these places existed that he had been reading about. He would go on reconnaissance, and they would meet villagers. And on one particular trip, he comes to a farmer, and he saw the farmer. It was hot and dusty, and he had a six-pack of Coca-Cola, ice cold, with him. And he goes up to the farmer and bows to him and hands him a six-pack of Coca-Cola. The man's face lit up, and he smiled, and he pointed at Jacob and then put his hand up almost to stop. And the man ran away, and Jacob understood that he wanted him to stand there. And the man came back, an Iraqi villager, with two watermelons. Here it is in the middle of the desert, and here's a man who does not speak the Iraqi language, and here's an Iraqi villager who probably did not trust American soldiers, exchanging Coca-Cola and watermelons. One of our core values at Viterbo is hospitality. But how do you teach that kind of hospitality? A radical acceptance of making space for the stranger in your life, a peacemaker of the 21st century. I have another student who is really marvelous in the work that she does. From a very early age, she was a dancer, very much committed as a leader in her community, was a student leader, would help conduct fundraisers that would fill food in the food pantry, always had an ability to serve others. She was very much concerned about elders. She knew from her own grandmother in terms of what our elders had to offer, and what she was able to do as a high school senior is to create a prom, a senior prom for seniors, where people got all dressed up and had a chance to be escorted to the door by young high school men, And then there was music that played the music of their era. And there was cake and there was ice cream. And seniors had a senior prom in which they were honored, which they experienced reverence, in which they had an afternoon of joy, all because the 17-year-old girl loved her grandmother. This young woman went on to compete in the Miss Wisconsin pageant, become Miss Wisconsin, and later had competed in the Miss American pageant, came back and worked for Cordis Corporation, McDonald's, and going out into communities wherever their stores were located, talking with high school students about the dignity of work and that everyone has a way in which to contribute. Isn't it amazing? 1 out of every 8 Americans has worked for the McDonald's Corporation, learning that when you have time to lean, you have time to clean. And she certainly lived that out. Now she has 4 children of her own and has written a book. Her children were going to church and asking her all kinds of questions, and so she had an idea that she might write an I Spy book for her children, so that when she brought them to church and they looked around, it was like I Spy, cultivating a religious imagination not only for her children, but for other young families who might not have been as familiar with their own faith tradition. Creating opportunities for seniors, now creating beauty for young children and their families. A life of service. Service is love made visible, and I see this as this young woman lives that out each and every day of her life. One of my students who came to me came from Southern Sudan. Southern Sudan is the newest country in the world. And if you've been following the news, we talk about what's taking place in Gaza. We've taken talk about what's going on in Ukraine. But it's also important to pay attention to what's happening in Sudan because of civil war and people having to escape into refugee camps throughout Africa because they cannot go back to their own country. Well, when there was a new country, this man joined our master's degree in servant leadership, and his 501(c) was Seeds of Wisdom, was to build a Catholic school in Southern Sudan so the children would be taught servant leadership, because all they have known are dictatorships for the last 50 years. The school was open for 4 years before the civil war broke out. But he was able to raise $500,000 to build a school that was educating 350 children in Southern Sudan, the newest country in the world. Now that civil war is reigning in the country, the children and their families have had to flee to refugee camps in Uganda, and the board of directors of Seeds of Wisdom has continued to raise funds to pay the salary of a headmaster who keeps track of all the children living in refugee camps, making sure that they receive their education in the hopes that when the war stops, they may return and rebuild their school. A vision of peace and cooperation and community, a vision born of courage and dedication, service and love. Wow. 41 years in the classroom, and I wonder why I am not paying tuition to learn so much. Education comes from 2 Latin words, educare. It means to lead from ignorance to knowledge, to lead from confusion to clarity, to lead from darkness into light. Thank you, young people who've taught me so well. Thank you for the light that you've shown me by walking through the darkness of violence. Thank you for the light that you've demonstrated in overcoming genocide only to provide leadership to the country. Thank you for your willingness to show hospitality even in the midst of adversity. Thank you for being so faithful to our elders and now our children, but particularly to yourself and your deep faith in God. Thank you for the courage and vision of building peace in places like Southern Sudan and Uganda, helping make sure that all God's children are given a sense of hope. This has been the work that I've been given to do for 41 years. Good work, hard work, noble work, dare I say sacred work, and I am so grateful. I hope that you too are grateful for the people in your life who instruct you. Make sure you tell their stories often. It's one way we know that we can guarantee happiness.
Our thanks to Tom Thibodeau for today's message. Tom, a distinguished professor of servant leadership at Viterbo University. And for archived podcasts and more on-demand programs, and for more on the professional development for today's dairy producer, head to PDPW's free website at pdpw.org. Until next time, have a safe and productive week.